This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello, and welcome to the second episode of Market Talk for the month of May. In this programme, we'll be sifting through last week's US CPI inflation numbers. We'll be chatting through the recent rise and return of meme stocks. We'll also be looking forward to a variety of flash PMI surveys and asking what's behind the rise of copper. So, hosting the call from the UK and hoping the rain holds off for this week's Chelsea Flower Show is me, Francis Watson. But giving us his usual top-class display of answers is Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong. Ben, how are you?
Yep, very well. Thanks, Francis. I don't have a garden, but I've definitely got rain. We had a red rain warning yesterday. So in Hong Kong, they have three stages of rain. They have amber, which is like pretty torrential, red, which is incredible, then black rain. I've only had black rain once in the last few years. That was last year, and that was the one. Do you remember I told you it was 9 inches of rain in an hour or something? We had pretty bad yesterday.
You can't even use an umbrella in those sorts of conditions. That sounds horrendous. No. Anyway, from rain to inflation, and luckily US inflation was a little bit brighter than expectations, but we had soggy retail sales and industrial production figures. Where does that leave us then in terms of the overall narrative, Ben?
Well, inflation, you say, I think there was a good marketing job by, I guess, the bulls, the equity bulls, who were saying that inflation was better than expected. Actually, it was just bang in line with expectations. What it was is it wasn't higher than expected, which we'd had all year. Do you remember, like, January, February, March, inflation in the US came in higher than expected, which is worse for markets, wasn't it? Because everyone is now dialing back the rate cuts, thinking that the Fed is going to have to wait to cut rates. So that had an impact, negative impact on equities. Well, the latest inflation was bang in line with expectations. I would say from a core inflation perspective, it also did decelerate. So that's good. It had been sticky at sort of 3.8, 3.9 for 4 months in a row. Now it came down to 3.6. So not a huge amount, but I guess if you look at a chart, it looks as though it is coming down now. And if you follow that trajectory, you can hope that it will get back down to target, sort of 2.5% down to 2% at some point, and that will allow the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates. But it's still pretty sticky. I mean, 3.6, if we get another print that's around 3.6, it will look as though it's just stuck in the high threes. That's the problem. But what you said, the second point, I think is possibly more important about retail sales and industrial production. Retail sales came out definitely worse than expected. So, you know, maybe that's not the best thing for retailers, is it? But from a macro perspective, alongside some downward revisions for previous months, so it was lower than expected and they revised down. And now the trajectory for retail sales does look as though the US consumer has slowed. And that might be a delayed reaction to higher interest rates that we've now had for months, quarters, years, really, isn't it? And also, possibly they've started to run out of those COVID savings that everyone built up by being furloughed and getting checks in the post, not being able to spend money during COVID. They built up a big wadge of cash that now possibly has been spent. So that, from a Federal Reserve perspective, does look going forward, if there's going to be less spending, maybe that will lead to less demand, which ultimately will probably lead to downward pressure on inflation. So altogether, and I do think the retail sales was more important than inflation, but altogether, it does look as though that soft landing trade that had started at the beginning of May just carries on a little bit, which is generally good for equity and credit markets.
Okay, so soft landing narrative still intact for now. Let's just head off to China, Ben, where we've got mixed China activity there as well, but a little bit of policy support for the property market. Is it enough?
So the data, as you say, it's mixed, but it's been mixed now for ages, so it's not really changed. Basically, the Chinese consumer is weak. Domestic consumption isn't great. Property sector, of course, is weighing on that, and the property market still is pretty weak. But you've got on the other side, you've got relatively strong external demand. So what I mean is, the US importing stuff from China, and that's leading to more fixed asset investment in China as they're building stuff to export away from China. So yeah, there's weak internally, strong externally. And the policymakers have tried to have a look at that internal demand, and in particular the property sector. Now, they've come up with all sorts of policies over the last couple of years to try and support things. This time around, you could argue that they've gone a little bit further. So they've looked at from the supply side. So the fact that there's far too many flats in China that are just sat there not being sold. And they've said, we will lend money to local authorities, that we will get the banks to lend money to local authorities and they can go and buy some of these completed but unsold apartments, which, yeah, that's good. But the money involved is not a huge amount. They maybe could buy, if they used all of it, sort of 15 to 20% of the stock, but they're still building more flats. And this doesn't include, remember, those flats that are unfinished, that I still need to be actually, to get the builders in and finish them off. That doesn't include that. So it's only 15-20% of the literally that are just empty unsold flats. So it's a bit, but it's probably not enough, I don't think. And on the demand side, they've also cut mortgage rates, and they've decreased down payments. So they've reduced the deposits that you can put in place. Again, it's a small amount. These things will add up, and they are adding up, and maybe they're forming a bottom on the property market, but it doesn't sound like a bazooka to me. It's just a series of small shots being fired, which hopefully will add up to something important. But yeah, not a bazooka, I wouldn't say.
Okay. Well, let's turn to current thinking now. And what has been a bit of a bazooka has been the really strong rally and upwards momentum in equity markets, hasn't it, since the start of the year. But it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that there's a bit of a stalling in the credit rally. So a bit of a decoupling from equities and credit. Talk us through that, Ben.
There was a bit of a decoupling already in April, and April was a bad month for equity markets, and credit stayed pretty solid. There was just strong demand for interest rates, high yielding products, which, credit still has got a high yield thanks to higher government bond yields. So there was strong demand for that. And then, as you say, in the recovery in May, equity markets have had a good May so far. So this is up until the close of the 21st of May, as we're recording the 22nd. So the S&P was up to that point, just in May, to the 21st, so 3 weeks, 5.7%. Euro stocks was up 2.6%, so pretty good. The Hang Seng here in Hong Kong up 8.2%, so some of that China positivity is coming through there. So yeah, very good month so far, reversing that slightly weaker April. But credit, if you look at credit spread, so this is the yield, remember, over and above the government bond yield, so the extra yield you get for holding the credit, US dollar investment grade flat over that period. So no change at all, despite the S&P up nearly 6%. High yield, tiny amounts of tightening, 3 basis points of tightening over that period. So really very little. So why is that? I think one is what I just said before, is that it had a pretty good week April. So that I guess it had already started at fairly strong valuations. And then the other thing is, you do have to bear in mind that credit is that credit spread, but you also get the government bond market, and government bond yields have been falling, remember? So because of the soft landing narrative, there's been weaker data. So, the Federal Reserve might now be able to cut interest rates at some point in the next few months. So yields for US investment grade and high yield credit indices are about 0.25% lower over that period of time. So it's not the spread doing the job, it's the government bond yield.
And
maybe the yield. So the spread is maybe just sort of lagging a little bit. I just finally, just to make a further point on that valuation, those spreads that I'm talking about are historically at very tight levels. So the investment grade spread, which, as I said, was flat during May, that's 87 basis points, so 0.87% over and above the government bond yield. The tightest it's been on my index that I look at, the Bloomberg index, for the last 20 years, the tightest is 0.76, and that was in 2005, so nearly 20 years ago. So we're within, you know, 0.1% of those tight levels. So I guess that's another reason why it can't go tighter, because it's pretty much at the tights of the last 20 years.
We're already potentially there. Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting, isn't it? And the other interesting feature has been with the, you know, euphoria inequities that we've seen. Often we get movement in these meme stocks, don't we? Which are sort of on behalf of retail investors. Just explain to us what a meme stock is.
They're called meme stocks because they're people share ideas about these small names over social media or memes, don't they? So we're talking names like GameStop, AMC. Do you remember Bed Bath and Beyond? All these relatively small stocks, exactly, where these retail investors would be sitting on their computers sharing memes and trading them. And they just go to crazy, well, valuations that are not in line with normal fundamentals, shall we say. So that's definitely what happens with tremendous volatility. Now, that volatility had died down over the last couple of years. And then all of a sudden, for no particular good reason, they seem to have got the attention of people again. So GameStop, for example, ended April, that share price at $11. And then on the 14th of May, when it all kicked off, it went up to $65. That was the peak. Whoa. That was the highest. So it went up it's nearly six times. Last I saw, yesterday, I think it was 21st of May, it was back down to $22. So plenty of opportunity to get whipped, sword, and I don't know. Like I said,
I was going to say, I'm smelling burnt fingers here.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure some people make some money out of this, but it's very difficult. And yeah, it's not. It's like I said, the valuations on these stocks are not necessarily in line with fundamentals. So be very careful. I would suggest.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's just turn towards what's left of the rest of this week, because some quite important announcements. I know we've got Bank of Japan inflation out on Friday, but we've had, for our UK listeners, inflation data out in the UK. I mean, whichever way you slice and dice it, Ben, higher than expectations. Service inflation in particular, I could have told Andrew Bailey that with the cost of my haircuts these days. So does that mean that a summer rate cut is now not on the cards at all? We were expecting June, I think, weren't we?
Yeah. So the problem with UK inflation, particularly now inflation that is quite high, relatively high versus history, is that at times during the year, in particular, I think April is one of those times, that's when businesses put up their prices. And, you know, we know that there are some things that are obvious. You know, some of your bills will get changed in every April, so maybe some utility bills, but it looks as though many more service sector industries also change their prices in April. And so they're called menu price changes, because you sort of print the menu once a year. But that happens every year. And so I'm surprised that people are surprised that we have this bump, because you can see it from the chart. If you look at monthly inflation, particularly service sector inflation, as you just said, there's a spike every April. So what's going on here? It was higher than expected. So even factoring in that, I think most people who try and forecast inflation know about this, it was still higher than that. Overall core inflation on a year-on-year basis was up 3.9%, so near enough 4%, which was down a little bit compared to last month, but still 4%. That's way above what's required, isn't it? And the month-on-month number was nearly 1%. That's what I'm talking about. April has got a problem. You've got this lumpy inflation. Because it is so lumpy, inflation, it's going to take another 12 months before this number drops out and we see what April 2020. Five looks like, but we can't wait 12 months. I'm not saying the Bank of England will wait 12 months. They're going to have to focus on other factors, the labor market, see if there's some loosening there, wage inflation, see if that's coming down, maybe some more real-time indicators of prices everywhere else. The last Bank of England meeting had two votes for a rate cut, and there had only been one vote in the previous meeting. So I guess they're starting to build up. There's a meeting in June that is possible that there's a rate cut. I think before this inflation data, I haven't seen since the inflation data, that it was about a 50% chance that they could cut interest rates in June. We think it's more likely that they have to wait now, maybe till August. But that was our view beforehand. And this data probably suggests that that's even more likely, unfortunately.
Okay, interesting. And just before we go to the US and NVIDIA results, just wanted to, I know you've posted about this on LinkedIn recently, the rise of copper. Now, given we've got flash PMI sentiment surveys coming up towards the end of the week, and copper typically, I think, is a proxy for global growth, can we marry the two, or are there different circumstances for copper?
Yeah, so copper is known across markets as Dr. Copper because it's meant to have this a PhD in forecasting economic activity. And that's because normally when you're building a factory or you want to start building goods, you need to buy a lot of copper for the wiring and infrastructure. So copper prices go up. That is telling you perhaps that in the future you're going to be building more cars or whatever it might be. So yeah, it tells you when the economy is going to be booming. This time around, I think it might be losing its edge, though, unfortunately. It might be giving us a false signal. I sit next to our commodities credit analyst here in Hong Kong, and I asked him about it the other day, and he thinks it's more possibly structural than cyclical, some of the demands. So the electrification of the global economy because of the energy transition, and we're trying to move away from fossil fuels into electrification. That needs a lot of copper. You need a lot of wires for that.
Yeah.
Electric vehicles, they need a lot of copper. So that's to do with the price increase, the demand. And then on the supply side, he tells me, because he's looking at these companies, that there has been continuous disappointments with the amount of copper that's being created, dug out of the ground, copper oil, and then made into copper. They're struggling to make or struggling to hit the targets that they set. So you've got this high demand, slight miss on the supply, and that's what's leading to the price go up. So yeah, it is going up, but I don't think it's to do with the cyclical rebound in the global economy, unfortunately.
Okay, interesting take on that, Ben, thanks for that. Now, shall we just touch on NVIDIA results, which are latest today, Q1 results? And I suppose the reason why everyone is watching them is because the sheer size, you know, swings in the share price of NVIDIA, you know, will have an impact inevitably, certainly on the NASDAQ and, of course, on the S&P 500. What are your thoughts, Ben?
Yeah, so NVIDIA's market cap, just as how important it is for global markets, is as of yesterday, 21st of May, was $2.35 trillion. So that's the size of asset classes. You know, that's a lot bigger than the US high yield bond market, for example. And I was sort of thinking about it in the context of, you know, the new generation, the new industry. So NVIDIA is, you know, it dominates the chips used for AI alongside other things. But AI is really a big driver of this, of course. So AI is something that we're all hoping is going to give us productivity gains, and NVIDIA is benefiting from it. I was just looking at how big is the global cryptocurrency market, for example. That's $2.6 trillion. That's including them all, of course. So Bitcoin itself is a little bit over $1 trillion. So NVIDIA on its own is bigger than it's about the same size as the global crypto market, bigger than Bitcoin, bigger than as I said, the US high yield market is just so important. So it can lead to big swings in the NVIDIA share price. And of course, that will impact the S&P and NASDAQ. But I unfortunately, I'm not going to give you any clues about what the results are going to be, because I would
look
stupid.
So wrong. Yeah.
In about 12 hours. I look stupid often, but usually it takes a few weeks for it to come out.
Well, look, what is never stupid is your number of the week. So tell us what it is, Ben, and why have you chosen it?
I've chosen 12.2%, and that's because that is the rally so far this year on the much beleaguered China property bond, high yield property bond market. So this is an index, remember, of these property developers. They're high yield, so those are lower than investment grade, sub investment grade ratings. So some of the weaker developers, and this bond index, which I was quoting for a couple of years now, just getting hammered every single week. There's these bonds default. But this year so far, partly because of the measures that we spoke about earlier, and partly because they're so weak, it has rallied 12.2% this year. So it's worth bearing in mind that, you know, no matter how bad things are, how bad things look, things can bounce. And the S&P 500 this year is up 11.6%. It's not total return, but that's an index. But it's similar to that, you know, these high yield bonds. Now, just to put it in context, though, it is still down 60% from 3 years ago. So timing, as always, Francis, is everything.
Is everything. As investors, we should have that at the forefront of our minds always, shouldn't we? Well, look, happy NVIDIA result watching, and we'll speak soon. Flaming June awaits us. But for now, Ben, thanks always for your thoughts, and thank you all for listening. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of Legal & General Investment Management Limited, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for information purposes only, and we are not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general economic, market or political issues and/or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not an offer or recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against Legal & General in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this document contains third-party information, the accuracy and completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information, not for distribution to any person resident in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulation. Copyright 2024. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. In Hong Kong, this material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on X, formerly known as Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.